And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, the internet's most dangerous Ohio State website. I am your host, Matt Brown. It's good to be back here after a couple of day hiatus, after some technical problems. We had not one, but two podcasts eaten by the internet monster, but we're back here. We can be followed on LandGrant33 on the Twitters. I am at MattSBN. We are on iTunes and we're on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes.com/SBNation, and then Hangout in the Holy Land. All sorts of places here to find us. And if you have a question that you cannot express within a tweet or a Facebook comment, you can shoot me an email at matt.brown@sbnation.com. I am joined today here by my friend and frequent contributor here to the Hangout in the Holy Land, Chuck. Chuck, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Matt. It is a balmy 60 degrees here in Seattle, Washington. I'm taking my lunch break outside at work to record this pod, so life is good.
I'm glad to hear that. It's a beautiful and very decidedly Big Ten weather right here in Washington, D.C. It's overcast. It's hovering above freezing, and I think the scientific term for this kind of weather is generally shitty. But tomorrow I'm going on a business trip to take care of some SB Nation stuff in North Carolina, where I think it'll be slightly less crappy outside, and I'll get to drink cheer wine. So it should be pretty okay.
Yeah, it can't be that. And I actually think the one advantage that you have over there and that I'm lacking here, I feel like this really temperate Pacific Northwest climate's making me soft. You know, before I moved out here, I would have described my attitude towards weather as generally hard-nosed. You know, coming from the frozen tundra of Syracuse, New York, I felt pretty comfortable with the whole winter weather scene, and now I get up here and it's like 40 degrees. My God, I'm going to bust out every article of clothing I own that has long sleeves and put it all on at once. So,
and that's,
you know, I think
that's what happens when you leave.
You got Big Ten,
man.
Weather and a Big Ten attitude. So,
I'm always soft. Like I've lived most of my life within Big Ten country. I grew up in Ohio. I lived in Chicago for a long time. I live here in D.C. I've been in Indiana. I'm always complaining. And even when I moved to the South for a little bit, I complained then too. And that's just really because I'm a wuss. And that I think is what's made me really well qualified to be a sports writer. Because there's one thing that sports writers are really good at: it's A+ complaining. You know, that's pretty much half of our feeds is complaining about Delta's Wi-Fi and our hotel accommodation.
Oh, absolutely. Cottage industry in and of itself. But, you know, were it not for that, we would not have all these glorious hot takes birthed for our reading and devouring pleasure. So
that's really what keeps us cold, warm here on these cold winter days. And we have a chance here to share a couple of those. Since there's been a fair amount of Ohio State news that's happened since we've last spoken, and we're going to get a chance to cover some of that here in the end. But we also were soliciting some questions that we're happy to answer here. We got some of them via email. We got some from Facebook. We got some from Twitter. We got some around our office. And Chuck, I wanted to kind of dig into a couple of these here with you before we get to the news update angle. With this one here that I imagine that you probably have a quality take on. We had a gentleman here on Twitter ask us what our general thoughts are about storming the court. This was in the news recently after Kansas State, I believe, stormed the court after they beat Kansas in basketball. There was a little bit of a scuffle on the court, and that led to the high horse posse, you know, kind of harumphing over, you know, whether you should do that or whether there are some kind of like unwritten rules for when it's acceptable to do that. Chuck, what do you think about storming courts?
You know, I'm kind of two minds about this, and it goes – ties right into the whole rushing the field situation in football. But I think I generally feel like most people who criticize court storming and field rushing are people who probably have not been in college in a very long time, or they went to a college that didn't maybe have top-tier athletics and never really experienced the thrill of what it's like to actually just be in a setting like that where you're packed in tight, you're full of adrenaline, you're emotional, supporting a team along with, you know, anywhere between 75 to 100,000 of your closest friends. And so I generally try not to begrudge 18-year-old kids their ability to do sort of dumb things, because I think we've all been there, right? And the point where player safety is endangered, I think that's probably a bridge too far. But, you know, I think schools could also, you know, maybe take more of the mindset that this is going to happen, so we might as well do what we can to mitigate the damage rather than trying to prevent it from happening in the first place, but not imposing any measures that will make it safer if it actually does happen. I feel the same way about that that I feel generally towards abstinence-only sex education, that you're not actually going to do any good by asking people not to do something that they're going to do anyway. You might as well accept it's going to happen and do what you can to make it a little safer for everybody involved.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Have you ever been a part of a court storming or a field rushing?
I've never stormed a court. I have rushed a field. My sophomore year, Ohio State beat Iowa in overtime, I think 37-34, to send us to the Rose Bowl. And my seats from the very top of B-deck, I wouldn't call it a rushing of the field so much as a slow losing onto the field, because I think it took me the better part of a half an hour to even get down there. But, you know, it was we clinched the Rose Bowl berth. I was down there with a couple of my friends and, you know, posing for pictures on the field and kind of celebrating with everybody. And it was a completely harmless thing. It wasn't, there were no negative outcomes there. And, you know, it was something worth celebrating, to be sure, because Iowa was actually a really good team that year. It could be seen as an event worth rushing the field for. It seems kind of silly to think about that now with Ohio State as our most recent national champion compared to Iowa's recent on-field struggles. But
it's a nice tour down memory lane. When it's easy to forget that Iowa was a thing. It really wasn't that long ago when that was a big deal.
My only other at rushing the field actually came the night of my 21st birthday, my senior year. Ohio State beat Russell Wilson's Wisconsin team on that 47-yard Hail Mary to Devin Smith with just 30 seconds left on the clock. We got about halfway down the stands storming the field on that one. And then I realized that I was turning 21 in 90 minutes, and we just sort of banked right, headed out of the stadium and straight to the bars. So that was my only other attempt at it. I left the game with my Beanie Wells jersey covered in red paint because the person directly behind me had been shirtless and body painted. So they left a lot of themselves on the back of my jersey. But all in all, a good experience.
That sounds awesome. I've never done it. And, you're getting a chance to see it on TV all the time here, especially with this job. It looks fun as hell. My senior year at Ohio State, my football tickets were literally the second to last row in the entire stadium. I don't know what deck that is. You almost need binoculars. And I had a hell of a time. It was a lot of fun. But even if we had decided to storm the field in any of those games, it would have taken me 2 hours just to get down there. And I never had season tickets for basketball. I went a couple of times, but I studied in D.C. for one quarter, and then with my job, I was going to miss half the games anyway. So I align myself generally with the general sense of ridiculousness with this sport, and that we should always err on the side of things that are fun. Storming the courts is fun. So if you are an undergraduate and you are debating in your mind, should I storm this court? My advice to you would be to ignore anybody who says to consider the rankings of the teams here, or is our program prestigious enough to think of this as below them? That's all crap. If you can get away with storming the court, you should do it. If you can get away with storming anything, you should do it. It sounds fun. You don't get to do stuff like that anymore.
Yeah, revolutions start that way. You storm the Bastille, next thing you depose the French monarchy. I would say the one exception to that rule was
how we got Assassin's Creed.
Exactly. I would say the one exception to that rule would be anything that involves Rutgers athletics. I feel like if you're an Ohio State student and you storm a football field or a basketball court after a victory against Rutgers, you should maybe have any scholarships you have revoked and probably be kicked out of your dorm. But otherwise, I'm all for it.
That seems fair. Don't rush the field during the game, or you're gonna get tackled so hard your boat shoes fall off. And don't storm anything that has to do with Rutgers. Okay, those seem like appropriate rules. Let's get to our next question here. you okay there, buddy? It sounds like you got some wind going on there behind you.
Oh yeah, sorry. I'm sitting here on the shores of Lake Washington. Like I said, suffering this beautiful day. You can see Mount Rainier peeking out in the background, which is, not your typical March 3rd weather, but making the most of it here and trying to keep the phone out of the blast radius of this wind here.
I think it's great that you're providing all of our listeners here some important, ambiance and it's like we're there. I appreciate that. Here's another question. You guys may have missed this earlier today, but the Columbus Crew had announced a change to their stadium name. Right? So it was just Crew Stadium, and now it's I guess it's pronounced MAPFRE, MAPFRE. It's an insurance company that's based in Europe, and I guess has an office in Columbus. And hey, that's fine if they're going to the Crew get some money, and that's good. But it's not a local company. So I'm wondering if it was up to you, if we could name Columbus Crew Stadium after any company, ideally one based in Ohio, but I suppose anyone in general, who would you name it after?
I think my top two would have to be the Jenny's Ice Cream Stadium and Lucky's Outhouse Memorial Field, to acknowledge my own two personal favorite locations in the city of Columbus. Beyond that, I have no actual good takes on this issue. Not being a native Ohioan, I have very little stake in the national corporations based out of Ohio game. But I'm curious to hear what your take is.
That's no fun. Lucky's is a great answer. We were kind of joking around about this in the staff room today. Like, do you remember that record store on High Street? Like, it'd be pretty funny to have Magnolia Thunder Pussy Stadium as your soccer field. Jenny's is a great idea. I would get season tickets for any venue named after Wits. I'm a Wits partisan myself, since that comes out of Granville, and that's like the only thing other than Denison University that came out of my hometown. But the Outer Inn Memorial Stadium or Lucky's Memorial Field, I think would probably be pretty tough to stop.
Yeah, you could also get Bagwood Field at Ohio Deli Stadium. I think that would go over well with the with the lunch meat contingent and of the Crew fan populace.
I always joke, but every once in a while you hear some chatter about how Columbus wants to get an NBA team, and my dream is for like Wendy's to get into a sponsorship there and have the team called the Columbus Baconators. Like, that would be awesome.
Oh, that's the dream.
Yeah. All right. So another question here that we got from Twitter was, and this is, hits to a favorite thing here that we like to hammer on this show. It's, do you think that Ohio State football will ever win a Coach of the Year award within the Big Ten? And if so, how long will it take? Somehow this didn't happen last year. And yes, we're still salty about it.
Yeah, I think, I've mentioned this on the pod before, I think the whole award is just misnamed because it seems to go year after year, coach who makes the most out of the least, as opposed to the coach who actually does the best job. Because there were certainly plenty of expectations shattered by Urban Meyer winning national championship. And I would, I don't think it's too ridiculous to argue that that's a greater accomplishment than Jerry Kill winning 8 games with, one of the worst recruiting programs in the Big Ten, which, I love when that's pointed to also. I was like, the school doesn't have top-tier talent, but the coach managed to still make a great season of it. It's like, well, guess who's responsible for bringing in that top-tier talent? Oh, that's right. The head coach who drives the entire recruiting process. Urban Meyer has proven himself to be a wizard at that, and Jerry Kill, not so much. Perhaps with the emergence of Billy Bardan as an internet hero, Minnesota's recruiting might start improving. But, it's the whole Coach of the Year thing is pretty ridiculous, especially within the conference. I think it just goes to show you what kind of a circus the Big Ten is and the sort of expectations that they set for themselves. So, I don't think Urban Meyer will actually ever win it unless there's just a total change of culture within the conference, which I don't see happening.
You provide, I think, another important reason why we need to start naming some stadiums after ice creams, and that's to kind of put up a firewall against Billy Bardan. You're really kind of cornering that market. I'm with you. Like, it goes to whoever does the most with the least, and Ohio State is unquestionably going to have the most, not just in the conference, but really nationwide, given how much the return from last year's football team, the obvious depth at a quarterback, and after bringing in another really good recruiting class. So even if they win the Big Ten and make the playoffs and don't win the championship or something, that's going to be set as their baseline expectation. It would. I maybe Ohio State might be able to do it in a post Meyer era, or you know, if somehow the Michigan and Penn State Death Stars get going again, and winning the East means more. But yeah, I would be shocked what happens in the next 5 years, even if Ohio State unquestionably deserves it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
On that note, somebody else asked who we think is the biggest long-term threat to Ohio State in the East Division. You know, in the immediate future, it's probably still Michigan State, even though they lost a bunch of guys here in their secondary and within their offensive skill positions. But if we take a 3 or 4 year view here, does that change for you?
I think a little bit. I could see Michigan State also being a candidate for aggression when you realize that, yes, Connor Cook is coming back, but they're also in the immediate future losing their biggest wide receiver / cornerback threat this year in Tony Lippett. They've lost a number of extremely talented running backs both this year and last. So it's, you know, Michigan State is by no means a guarantee as a long-term threat in the East. I think Mark D'Antonio is a fine coach, but it'll be interesting to see how he's able to fare without Pat Narduzzi shoring up the defense now that he's gone to Pitt. I can honestly see, and as much as I love to clown on Penn State, you know, that with the kind of recruiting prowess that their coach brings in, the sort of no-nonsense approach they're trying to take to things and performing that program, I could see Penn State actually making much deeper runs in the next 3 or 4 years, certainly not immediately, because they really need to solve their offensive line problems before any kind of real power can come from Penn State. But in the slightly longer view, I think Penn State might have a chance to unseat Michigan State as a prime candidate for Ohio State upset material.
Sure, sure. I don't think you're wrong there. You know, I think in a 5-year window, it's got to be either Penn State or Michigan. There was something that came out today. It was on the Big Ten Network site, and it was a list of what each school is able to offer as far as their cost of attendance stipend, which will go into effect for next year. These aren't the final numbers. Like, they can be adjusted, I believe, up until July, and I wouldn't be surprised if Ohio State, make some changes there, but Penn State is offering the largest amount by far, which seems weird because Penn State's like in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, and you would think that the cost of living in a place like Northwestern or Columbus or Minnesota that are in urban campuses would be more than rural Pennsylvania, but apparently schools can just kind of make up this number. So you have a program that's got a great recruiting coach. You have a bunch of talent coming in there. You have the infrastructure and resources to be able to build that up. You have the ability to wave money around. I don't know about next year because that offensive line is still really bad, but there's a lot of really exciting offensive skill position talent and defensive line talent. If Penn State's able to get a quarterback post-Tackenberg, they can be very dangerous. But, I mean, Michigan State probably declines a little bit. They're still going to be good. Michigan's got nowhere to go but up. It's going to be a dogfight on that side of the division for a couple of years. I'm much more skeptical about the long-term prospects of schools in the West, unless either Wisconsin or Nebraska's coaching searches, new coaching changes turn out much better than we thought. But there's going to be a couple of really good teams on that side of the Big Ten here for the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting how few, speaking of the Big Ten West, how few like legitimate quarterback threats there are there. Like, yeah. Between Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, I mean, doesn't seem to be one guy on the roster of any of those three teams combined that can actually throw a football with any kind of precision. So it's very hard to take those teams as a threat, despite the amount of production they've been able to get out of their ground game in the last two seasons, each of those three teams. It's very hard to see them becoming really dangerous unless they show that they can consistently develop and recruit quarterback talent, because it really does come down to that more than just about anything.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I guess the best quarterbacks on that side of the division are at Illinois. Northwestern has some young guys that they're excited about, but I don't know if there's anybody at Iowa, Wisconsin. Maybe Wisconsin's freshman that just pulled out of Utah, but in terms of somebody who's ready to contribute now, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin all have major question marks. So that's going to be the dominant storyline on that side of the division, I think, moving forward. Another interesting question here that came up, and it'll be interesting to hear this from you. Both of us, I think, have other schools that we outside of Ohio State that we follow at least a little bit. I know that you're from Syracuse. You have a connection to that program. You're at least aware of what's going on with Syracuse. For me, given my wife and my job here and my religious background, I'm more aware of what's happening here with BYU. I don't know if I'd call myself a BYU fan necessarily, but like that's, you know, I'll probably root for them to make the NCAA tournament to do well. Are there any other programs outside of Ohio State and those, you know, for, you know, for you that you kind of have adopted as like a secondary rooting interest, or one that you, you know, in a, all things being equal, that you'd like to do well?
Yeah, I think Syracuse is definitely up there, although it is fun to just be kind of contrarian and, you know, talk smack about them, especially because my senior year was the year that we beat Scoop Jardine's Syracuse team by 7 points in the Elite Eight. And so it's one of those situations where everybody I went to school with kind of assumed I'd be rooting for Syracuse, and everybody from back home kind of assumed I'd be rooting for Ohio State. And so nobody really wanted to be around me or talk to me. But, you know, I didn't choose to be from Syracuse, but I did choose Ohio State. And so that was definitely where my allegiance lay in that particular game. I also, I'm not the biggest Jim Boeheim fan. That's bordering on sacrilege where I'm from, but I'm not wild about Jim Boeheim, and I'm not wild about the way he handles the players, their potential leaving for the NBA and things like that, the way he talks to them about that whole process. But being out here in Seattle, though, I've really started to enjoy watching the various sports teams at the University of Washington out here. The football team was really interesting this past year because they were pretty consistently mediocre. They didn't really win any big games. They gave up 56 points to Eastern Washington, but they have their defense this year had three top 50 NFL draft prospects on. I mean, guys, they're going to go real early in Danny Shelton, Haole Kagaha, and Shaq Thompson. So they were a really fun team to watch on the defensive side of the ball. Their offense was one of the ugliest, most atrocious things I think I've ever had to lay eyes on. Silas Miles is a quarterback in the same way that I am a nuclear physicist. And it was pretty painful to watch him try to operate a system under Chris Peterson. So I also love to see the Huskies do well, although they're not exactly in prime position for that moving forward with the amount of talent they're losing on the defensive side of the ball on the football team. Basketball team is okay, not great. But I'd say those are my two rooting interests at the moment. I never complain about seeing UCLA do well either because my mom was that's her big secondary team. And Mark Harmon, now the star of NCIS, cable's number one watched drama, when he won the Heisman Trophy back as a UCLA quarterback back in the day. That was my mom's, you know, he could have been my father. You know, I think about this from time to time. But that's about it as far as my external rooting interests go. I think I have far more dilution of my allegiances in professional sports because I find it harder to care quite as much, even though I do have favorite teams. But college for me, I mean, Ohio State is one that's the only team that really runs deep with me in any sport. So.
Sure. That all makes sense. I have two other ones as far as college sports are concerned. I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for American University. That's actually where I originally went to college. I spent my freshman year at American. Played in the pep band. Nearly got thrown out of a game for playing drums during free throws against Holy Cross, and the referee called technical foul, and the athletic director nearly killed me. It's not like at the school it's in the news all that much, but when they are, I'll make a big show out of it, and I try to go to a game or two a year now that I'm local. And I have a little bit of a soft spot for East Carolina, kind of a random school. That's actually where I'm going on Thursday. I'm going to speak to a couple of classes there about, you know, the quote future of journalism and that sort of thing, and help meld some young minds. But my mom's a professor there. That was the first place to give her the start of her academic career. I've been to a couple of their football games. I've been to some of their other sports, and that's not too far from where I am now. They play really exciting football. Their fans are crazy. The barbecue is unexpectedly good. I don't know if I want my kids to go to ECU necessarily, but it's kind of fun to watch their crazy purple football team sling the ball all over the field, and they're okay at some other things. So like, obviously nothing on the level of Ohio State or maybe even BYU, but you know, I have a soft spot for the Pirates, and I hope they do well next season as well. We got time here.
Chris Johnson, who was the most exciting player in the NFL for like 2 years before he got consigned to the scrap heap. So, you know, go Pirates.
Go Pirates. Yeah, it's like the weirdest thing, right? You go there, they have like their midfield logo, which takes up like the entire field, and it's like this really like ominous looking, you know, pirate skeleton thing. And then like during the fourth quarter, they raise this like big angry red flag that has like the pirate logo and it says no quarter. And every time the Pirates get a first down, there's like 50,000 people all going arr. And it's like kind of adorable because it includes like a lot of old ladies, because there's not like a whole lot of going on in Greenville other than ECU, so like the whole town goes. But then you have like some like, you know, kind of liquored up, like legit like angry people. Like, okay, like it's got like that small town feel. It's got a little just a tiny bit of the craziness of some of these big name schools. And then like the last two games I went to, they won by like 50 and they threw the ball a gajillion times. So, you know, you got the air raid and scary pirates. Like, I don't know what else you could want.
Yeah, absolutely. East Carolina, catch the magic, you know?
Catch the magic. And last note, last time I bought a ticket, on my ticket that I printed out, coupon to Bojangles. So, you know, get some cheap fried chicken on your way out. It spoke to me on, like, every level as a person.
That's great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, last question here, and this is a basketball one here, and then we can kind of get to some of this new stuff. Who do you consider to be – I mean, Ohio State basketball doesn't really have the same traditional rival that their football team does. The Ohio State-Michigan basketball teams, they don't really like each other, and we may reflexively dislike Michigan, but there isn't the same history, and maybe some Ohio State fans dislike other teams more. You, as a Buckeye fan, which team do you want to beat the most each season?
Oh, great question. That's a tough one. I think Wisconsin is always up there for me just because I'm pretty constantly infuriated that they just have like five huge white guys with buzz cuts, as Mark Titus rightfully points out, and are somehow just so good at college basketball games. So it's always a pleasure when we're able to beat them, because, you know, strong team year in and year out. It's actually who we finished with this year. So we'll all be watching with bated breath to see what happens there. Michigan is always great too, you know, regardless of the lack of tradition. I think one of my favorite Ohio State basketball memories is Evan Turner hitting that half-court shot in 2009 or 2010 at the buzzer to beat Michigan. And I think it was maybe the Big Ten title game.
It was the semifinals,
an all-time great moment. What's that?
Yeah. I think it might have been the semifinals. But it was awesome.
For sure. So, and like you said, I mean, I was never my basketball allegiance was never quite as rabid as my football one, although I was the biggest Aaron Kraft homer there ever was. I also really enjoyed my senior year. We played Duke at home in Columbus, and, you know, this was in November, so pretty early in the season. Ended up winning by, like, 22 points. And that was awesome, especially because one of my roommates was an enormous Duke fan and made a point of going to the game decked out in all of his Duke gear, was sitting right in the middle of the Ohio State student section being as obnoxious as possible, and then had to walk out of there, you know, hanging his head, just taking an endless amount of grief for how badly Ohio State had wiped the floor with them. So I know we don't play Duke all that often or have occasion to, but I think just as a sports fan in general, it's kind of a pleasure to watch them lose. So I'll take that anytime I can get it too.
I, for me personally, I think it's Wisconsin as well. And it's weird because I, you know, my family lived in Madison for a while. I think very highly of the school, and, you know, I'll go there for any weekend, any chance I could get, but I hate watching their basketball team. I hate watching them because of the slow pace. I hate watching them because Bo Ryan is an extremely dislikable person and coach, if you're an Ohio State fan, from all the, like, you know, the spitting on Jared Sullinger and the deal with it crap. I hate the officiating that goes on in the Kohl Center and the fact that Wisconsin's been very consistently good. So, like, throughout the formative years of my college basketball fanhood, Michigan basketball was not, and quite frankly, for a while, Ohio State was not very good either. So that didn't mean as much. Right now, I think Wisconsin and Indiana are the two most hateable teams for their coaches and their fan bases. And where they've been kind of historically over the last, you know, decade or so, with Michigan kind of being behind. But will I disappointed if Duke loses in the second round of the tournament this year and a bunch of other white kids from some tiny school end up doing the nay-nay? Will I be sad? No, I will not. That will be glorious. And if Duke is the first one seed to go down to a 16 seed, I think our website would break. I would not mourn this event either. It is kind of weird because, you know, I talked to other guys like, no, it's Michigan State, got to beat them, or Illinois. You know, there's, you might get six different answers. It's kind of a weird situation.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about Indiana. I guess I don't hate them so much as I just enjoy laughing at Tom Crean. But I think Ohio State's two games against Indiana this year were sneakily like two of the most entertaining games that we've seen played by the Buckeyes this season. A little nicer because we actually won. But just the quality of play and you know, the way they play. I don't hate Indiana, although I am generally pretty frightened of them.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. All right, so we'll probably do one of these again a little bit later. If you have questions, you can feel free to email me at matt.brown@sbnation.com. You can tweet me. You can tweet at Land Grant. Hit us up on Facebook. We're all over the place. We've got a couple other quick news hits here before we sign off. And Chuck, I know that you don't follow Ohio State recruiting terribly closely, but you know, I would be remiss if we don't mention this. In case you missed it, this happened a little bit later last night. Here, hold up. buddy, do you think you can go somewhere with the wind?
Yeah, I'm ducking behind a hill here right now, seeing what I can do about it.
Okay. All right. I think we can hear now.
Yeah.
That's much better. Next time I got to do this in like some kind of conference room or something. The Buckeyes picked up their seventh commitment in the 2016 class, which moves them up to the fifth ranked recruiting class. I mean, obviously it's early as hell. That is a consensus 4-star defensive end, Terrell Hall, from St. John's College here, local in Washington, D.C. Extremely physically developed guy. Ohio State could potentially take four defensive ends here, and they're all ridiculously solid. Jonathan Cooper, another defensive end from down the road in Gahanna, consensus 4-star. Ohio State's widely considered to be able to pick up Joey Bosa's kid brother, who's a 4- or 5-star kind of caliber guy, and there's a few other ones that they're in on. This is a class that might be the best class in the country when all things said and done, or they're going to be very close. And the foundation of that's going to be another absolutely nasty defensive line. So that's going to be a very exciting thing here for Ohio State to look at moving forward, since one of the reasons that this year's team was so successful is they had a great pass rush, and that's really being redone here now. I think that we're going to see a couple more of these. Either commitments might happen in the next month or so as prospects are coming to visit for the spring practice and the spring game, which will be in April, and that we hope to be at and we'll be covering closely. The other thing, and maybe you have an opinion here on this, Chuck. So after Ohio State beats Purdue in an ugly game, a big come from behind here, huge win on Ohio State's home court, the Buckeyes are now seen as either a 7 or an 8 seed in most projections and have the capacity to move up a little bit if they're able to knock off Wisconsin or move through the Big Ten tournament. Do you think that's fair? And is there a team that you're kind of looking at right now that you really don't want Ohio State to face early on?
Early on in the Big Ten tournament or early on in the NCAAs?
Let's say either.
Okay, well, I think the obvious choice for don't want to face early in the NCAA tournament has got to be Kentucky. You know, those 7 through 10 games that, you know, the 7-10 and the 8-9 are often like some of the most exciting matchups we see in the first weekend of the tournament. But it's very easy to see, you know, with Kentucky as a 1 seed, that there's a good chance that if Ohio State, you know, plays some good basketball and sneaks through their first game, could be staring down Kentucky in the second round, depending how the actual seed shakes out for the Buckeyes. And short of like a bus crash by Kentucky, I don't think there's any way that Ohio State has a prayer in that game. They're just too deep. They spread the ball too well. It's funny, not a single player in Kentucky has like a ridiculous scoring average or even a ridiculous rebounding average, but all of them have like their starting five and their first two guys off the bench have startlingly similar numbers. They distribute the ball so well. They're all so reliable in multiple facets of the game that it's just extremely difficult to see any way that Ohio State stays even close in that game, shy of a 45-point night from D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I mean, not only is Kentucky just stupid talented, but they're also like a really bad matchup for Ohio State specifically because they're huge, and Ohio State is not that big of a team, and Ohio State's front court it has not done well even against really small teams where they have an opportunity to be physically dominant. And so you just imagine that Amir Williams and Trey McDonald are going to foul out like combined within like 12 minutes. Like that would be a catastrophe. Ohio State should hopefully avoid them in that 7-10, like 8-9 kind of spot there. As far as a first round game that would really kind of bum me out, it's certainly possible Ohio State could play Dayton again in the first round. They're also kind of in that same territory there, and that's just insufferable if Ohio State was to play Dayton again and lose. That's a better matchup. Dayton's pretty small, and Ohio State I think is better equipped to play small ball than kind of pound the rock at somebody. But, you know, I wouldn't want that, especially after last year. I mean, I think Dayton beat Ohio State in baseball, and I've just had enough of that part of the state.
Yeah, it seems like our dominance over other teams from in-state doesn't really extend past football. And, you know, I don't want to give Dayton anything to cheer about. So that would be absolutely upsetting if we had to face down the specter of Dayton again in the first round, having been kind of embarrassed by them last year and really without, you know, past Russell, night to night, we don't really know what kind of reliable options we have. You know, that's something that ideally should be figured out before you get to the NCAA tournament. And the Buckeyes haven't quite managed to find their reliable second banana yet. We thought that was going to be Mark Loving, and he was for most of the early going this season. But after his suspension, he just hasn't looked like the same guy. You know, we sort of bounced around from Sam Thompson to Jayshon Tate as our most reliable second contributor, and it's still very hard to see.
You're totally right. And the whole domination of the state of Ohio not extending to basketball is true. That's especially worrisome because Dayton's really not the only team that could potentially be in there. Both Xavier and Cincinnati are all also kind of floating around that 8, 9, 10, 11 seed mark. So depending on how their conference tournaments go, that could also set up a first-round matchup, which would be bad for the Buckeyes. Hopefully they're able to take care of Penn State. Mark Loving can rebound a little bit and put Ohio State in a position to be a little bit farther up and maybe avoid a one or a two seed in the second round if they're able to do that. I think that's just about here going to do it for us. Chuck here, thanks so much for your time. We'll talk with you later, hopefully next time when you're inside.
Yeah, sorry about the wind, and thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, you bet, buddy. All right, that's our friend Chuck. In the meantime, if you have a question for the Hangout in the Holy Land, be sure to tweet us at either MattSBN or LandGrant33. You can email me, matt.brown@sbnation.com. We're on Facebook. We're all over the place. We'd love to hear what you're thinking here, and we'll talk about your question here on the air. We will be back in action again next week. I will be in North Carolina the next couple of days, including the Penn State game. And hopefully we have some better news to talk about when you come back to the show. In the meantime, thanks, everybody, for listening. And go Bucks.